I have in mind to speak this evening about something I brought forward maybe 5 or 6 weeks ago related to the four guardians. And the four guardians appear in this room multiple times on the bowing mat, those four corners, on the brown bowing mat, those four corners, on the robes that people are wearing, the four corners of the robes. These are known as the guardians. And I have in mind to speak about these in the context of our collective history. Today is Juneteenth. This is the acknowledgement of an event in Texas in 1865. When the U.S. Army arrived in Texas in order to declare the slaves that lived there free. This was 2 years after the Emancipation Proclamation, which, as I understand it, freed those who had been in slavery in the Confederate States, which did not include Texas. So Juneteenth is the arrival of the U.S. Army, 1865, in Texas. And then it wasn't until the end of that year that the 13th Amendment was actually passed. So this is an example of the way in which we, in contemporary times, still feel the effects of our history. The causes and conditions of those years, of those people at that time, is still felt today very lively for me personally. And the question of reparations and apologies remains an open question. Although just yesterday, here in California, our own governor made a formal apology to the indigenous population of California for the history of violence and genocide. And he said it this way, that he hopes this belated gesture could help tell the truth about our past and begin to heal deep wounds. And an indigenous woman commenting about this event. To me and a lot of the tribes, we're going to be glad to hear this apology, but the real results will live in actions. This is just the first step. So in this context, I bring forward our own Dharma study as a process. And particularly that this process requires of us, if we're really paying attention, to be very practical. It seems like, you know, Dharma study can feel quite esoteric, I want to say. And it's not that. But it requires of us that we be very practical and very day-to-day, noticing the ways in which our own causes and conditions and our collective causes and conditions play out over time. And by this I now am referring to our collective history. So related to the guardians now, I want to ask and pose this question of us that it might take months. It has taken me months really to digest this question. What is called for? And specifically, what is called for in this circumstance? So, as a reminder about the four guardians, I will tell you about them. In case you weren't here, you'll get a sketch. The four guardians historically are recognized as north, south, east, and west, the cardinal directions. And in our literature, our lineage from India to China to Japan to the Western world, in the early literature, north is represented as rain. And the quality or characteristic of rain, of course, is water, therefore fluid. So the guardian of the north encourages us to be fluid. And the south, which in this room is this corner here, closest to Corrine, the south is recognized as wind. And it's a little counterintuitive, but please hold this one. The wind, my forest people tell me, the wind makes trees' roots grow deep. Therefore, the quality of south is stability. Deep roots, stable. So we've got fluid and stable in counterposition. And now east, I remember this one because the sun rises in the east and the world becomes alive when the sun, it's not alive ever, but it becomes lively in the auditory realm, including birds. The east is acknowledged with the characteristic of harmony. And the west is represented by a dragon, and it's the type of dragon that can fly horizontally and therefore have a wide view. There's more than one kind of dragon, I'm sure you know that. But this dragon is represented as flying horizontally, having a wide view. So the particular characteristic of the west is being able to have perspective. And then each person wearing the robe, you also have your own head pointing skyward, which we might call the zenith, and your own feet pointing earthward, in the earth direction. And we would call this the nadir. So we've got four directions and up and down, and of course the intermediate directions, northeast, southeast, southwest, northwest. Those are eight. Plus up and down, that's 10. When we say all Buddha's 10 directions, those are the 10 we're talking about. So you yourself, walking around in the world, are in a way the center of the universe. But it's not to be thinking, I am the center of the universe, in an egotistical way. It is rather the other way around, as in the teaching that we recite called the Jewel Mirror Samadhi. You are not it, it actually is you. So this is really the universe, we could say in esoteric terms, big mind, expressing itself as you. And so this requires of us that we pay attention to where we are, not just in physical location, but in time. Where are we in history? So I'm inviting us to inquire into what is it really to occupy our own Dharma position? And that in relationship to the question, what is called for? What is this Dharma position and what is called for? It is always true that myriad objects come forward and express the Dharma. And we don't always perceive this. It's not something special. It's actually ordinary, everyday. And this myriad objects coming forth and expressing the Dharma is simply an observation of an everyday fact that all beings, all people, all things are simultaneously coming forward right now. So all beings, including each one of us, constantly occupies our Dharma position. Whether we know it or not, we don't actually have to be conscious of occupying our Dharma position in order to occupy it. We might have personal tendencies, and I would even say cultural tendencies, to either call attention to ourselves or the opposite, to be a little bit different or to kind of stay around the edges in the world, not being obvious. And both of these, if we hold them strictly, are a little bit incomplete. So the trick to finding some completion, as I see it right now, is to respond skillfully to the context. This Dharma position in relationship to what is called for. No, what is called for doesn't exist by itself, and this Dharma position doesn't exist by itself. They exist in relationship to each other. So back to the Four Guardians here for just a moment. There is a kind of tension between being stable and being fluid. That sound, they're a little bit contradictory in a way. And there is a little bit of tension between, shall I fly up and get some perspective, or shall I step in and influence some harmony? There's a little bit of tension there. It's kind of dynamic. So the center of that fluid and stable perspective and influencing harmony, we live in that tension. Mel Weitzman many years ago, I could even remember the year probably, 2003, when I was studying, I was in a sesshin at Berkeley with Mel, and he described it this way. There is, he described the center of the human body as the hara. That gravity is always pulling earthward, and life energy is always pushing upward. So where life energy and gravity meet is the hara. So we can make that same generalization, I think, to this four directions, or even better, to the 10 directions. That place where the energies meet is very dynamic, and that's where we live. So, in the practice context, no one is fixed in any one of those directions. We find our dynamism wherever we are. I'd like to bring forward a teaching that Linda Ruth Kutz shared with me just about a month ago. It took me a while to really begin to understand it, and I would say that I'm just at the beginning of understanding it. This is a story called The King Wants the Saindava. That was a new word to me, Saindava. And the story is this way. But you would understand the language of this to be that Saindava has more than one meaning. So the great king tells his courtiers to bring the Saindava. And this indicates four things. That one word can mean water or salt or cup or horse. These four things have the same name. A wise courtier understood this word well. Here goes the story. When the king was about to wash his hands and wanted the Saindava, the courtier would bring water. When the king was about to have a meal and wanted the Saindava, the courtier would bring some salt. When the king finished eating and asked for the saindava so he could have a drink, the courtier would bring a cup. When the king desired to go out and requested the saindava, the courtier would bring a horse. This wise courtier thoroughly understood the great king's subtle use of this word. Apparently, this is a story that the historical Buddha told as a way of having people understand that context is everything. We might have a notion about a singular notion, a singular vocabulary item, but how we apply that notion or understand that vocabulary depends upon context. So the other day I was looking for something. I was looking for something else, but this is what I found. So I thought I would share it with you. And it actually is connected. I just broke the binding of my book. It's actually connected if you let yourself feel it. And this is a short reading in a book by Eduardo Galeano. It's called El Libro de los Abrazos, which is the Book of Embraces. And each one is a little poem or a little essay. And in this case, it's just a few sentences. I'd like to read it first in Spanish in order to honor Eduardo Galeano, and then I'll translate it for you. The title is El Miedo. Una mañana nos regalaron un conejillo de las Indias. Llegó a casa enjaulado. Al mediodía le abrí la puerta de la jaula. Volví a casa y al anochecer lo encontré tal como lo había dejado. Jaula adentro, pegado a los barrotes, temblando del susto de la libertad. So here's the translation. The title is Fear. One morning, they gave us a guinea pig. Conejillo de las Indias is a guinea pig. That guinea pig arrived at the house in a cage. Around midday, I opened the cage, the door of the cage. Around nightfall, I returned home, and I found him exactly as I had left him, in the cage, stuck to the bars of the cage, shaking with the fear of freedom. So, no one is in any one direction and no one is compelled to be in any one direction to stay. For example, I am always stable, or I am always fluid, or I always have the best perspective, or I can always incite harmony. No one has a fixed position like that. And yet, we kind of fearfully stay in fixed positions. We hold, I am this way. And without even noticing that our stance is limited and, in fact, limiting. So, thanks to Eduardo Galeano, I now understand, I begin to understand how it is that even presented the option of freedom, we stay kind of trembling. This is what I was actually looking for, and it's truly connected. I'm reading now out of Kaz Tanahashi's book called Zen Chants. It's 35 essential texts with commentary. And his translations are truly remarkable. The way he chooses English words reveals something about the meaning. And for those who are interested in this kind of thing, I very strongly encourage you to take some of the chants that we do repeatedly even the short ones, you know, and compare translations side by side. Here's what I have learned by doing that, and then I'll come back to cause. You know, as I understand the characters, which is minimally, each character has multiple meaning. And if we look at more than one translator's understanding or interpretation of that meaning, we begin to understand the actual meaning, because each one has chosen kind of a different word that gets at it or that hints at the actual meaning. So for those who are interested in understanding original meanings, I highly encourage you to study multiple translations. And causes reveal something to the modern Western mind that our traditional translations don't usually get at. So in this case, he's talking about the chant that we do called the formless repentance. All my ancient twisted karma, from beginningless greed, hate, and delusion, born of body, speech, and mind, I now fully avow. So in this context, he's talking, and I'll read to you. This particular part at the end of the paragraph is a lot like this guinea pig in the cage, but it's the flip side of it. We are influenced by a tremendous amount of forces that are completely out of our control. Under these limitations, however, there are also a great number of elements we can control and change. Changing one's gender, nationality, religion, or legal name is not easy, but it's not impossible either. Changing one's partner, career, diet, exercise, tastes, habits, behavior, way of thinking, way of speaking, lifestyle, and daily schedule are all possible. We are in the midst of changeable and unchangeable karma in each moment. We are bound by cause and effect, but at the same time we are partly free of cause and effect. This is the case during meditation, when we can be completely free from the chain of causation. At this time, we can be anybody and anywhere. We are what we meditate. We are also the source of cause and effect. Now, in this paragraph, Kaz has indicated to us that in each and every moment we have the possibility of stepping out of the cage, and yet we quiver like the guinea pig, out of either not even comprehending that the cage door is open, or in fear of what liberty, or what is it, freedom would actually look like. There's a little bit more in Kaz commenting about his own translation. And I will read you his translation first. We say, all my ancient twisted karma, that one. He says, for all my unwholesome actions since olden times, from my beginningless greed, hate, and ignorance, born of my body, speech, and thought, I now fully atone. So, for me, his translation puts this in the context of course, we have all of these causes and conditions that came to us as part of the cultural and societal and family package that we got. And yet, this is born of my body and my speech and my mind. I now fully atone. So he's commenting now on his own interpretation. Looking at all the existing translations so far, including the version above, which is the one we chant, gives me an impression that people atone only ancient twisted karma and not the recent or current karma. But we also need to atone recent and current unwholesome actions, a need that is reflected in the translation I present. So, Kaz is really saying,
can you read this again?
His his translation of the verse. And he doesn't call it formless repentance, he calls it atonement. For all my unwholesome actions since olden times, from my beginningless greed, hatred, and ignorance, born of my body, speech, and thought, I now fully atone. So, in this atonement, we're required now to ask, you know, what am I afraid of? What is it? The door of the cage is wide open. Why am I still trembling inside? We can say, I'm stable. This is my way. I'm afraid of being fluid. Or, no, I'm fluid. I'm afraid of being stable, meaning I'm afraid of being constrained. Or, no, my way is to step back and get the perspective. Oh, no, my way is to create harmony to the exclusion of stepping back, for example. What are we afraid of? So, if I hold to, for example, I tend this way, I'm stable. I'm afraid of fluid. But this is a little bit like offering a cup when what is needed is a horse. This is the sandaiva. What's required in this context? So what's required, and it's quite simple, is to simply occupy our own Dharma position. And can we do that without dominating the space? That's not so easy. Can we occupy our own Dharma position without doing me, mine, myself, this one? Just bring ourselves forward. There is another bit that I'd like to refer to from Cause, that is the verse of the Han. And on the Han, wake up, everyone, life swiftly passing. Be aware, the great matter, don't waste time. And Cause's version. Life and death are of grave importance, impermanent and swift. Wake up, all of you. Do not waste your life. It's pretty straightforward. He calls this a reminder. And as I understand it in his description now, in some monastic places, that reminder, wake up all of you, swiftly, life is swiftly passing, is the last thing spoken at night aloud. And then next morning, we chant, robe chant, of course, and then the very next thing that we recite together, all my ancient twisted karma. These are a pair. We have to understand them as a pair. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So this verse is recited by the one who hates the Han. In some Western monasteries, the chant leader recites this verse at the end of the evening sitting period. He calls it a common translation modified by the editor. I love Cause. He's so humble. You know, he knew Catherine. Catherine knew him. They worked on a translation together. I have an opinion about that book of translations. I'll share it with you. Cause did a bunch of translations with Catherine's generation of teachers, some before they were Dharma transmitted. And here's my opinion. Cause didn't need help. He's totally bilingual in Japanese and English. He's bicultural. He reads Sanskrit, he reads Chinese. He didn't need help translating. It's my opinion that he was sitting with each one of these about-to-be Dharma teachers in the West and teaching them how to approach this material. And each one of them is different. It's influenced by each of the Western leader in collaboration with him, you know. He demonstrated with his activity the dynamism of this practice, finding a cultural home in this country. So I'm going to give us two very specific practices, and then I'll open to questions. Here's a very specific practice. Occupying your own Dharma position without being prominent in the space. Here's the practice. Can you open that door silently? It's not hard. At tea, I'll show you how to minimize the sound of the doorknob. Can you open that door silently, close that door silently, bow in and come to your space? Sit down. Be with the group. This is occupying your Dharma position without intruding on the space of other people. It's not about the door. And honestly, it's not about the sound. It's about you monitoring your own behavior. It's a mindful, one little tiny mindful place where you can mitigate your behavior. And this one I'll offer that we can do together in just a moment after questions and responses. We usually close with the four vows. And this is what I often hear. Beings are numberless. I vow to save them. And I'll ask us to shift this emphasis on the vow. Beings are numberless. I vow to save them. Subtly very different. Same words. Perhaps even the same intent, but de-emphasizing I. And we together enunciate this vow. This has relationship to Juneteenth. Maybe we can explore that together. Questions, comments? Sorrows, heartaches, troubles. What's on your mind? Yes?
The book you were referring to, Moon in a Dewdrop, is that the book you were referring to that has elaborated?
I can picture the cover.
Moon in a Dewdrop, yeah.
Is that the one it is? Yes, that's what was on my mind primarily, but yes. Mm-hmm. And you'll see that Catherine's work with Kaz is in there. And they maintained a relationship, friend relationship, for the rest of her life. And I imagine he did with each one of those teachers. Thank you. Anything else? Yes.
I like your advice about looking at a variety of translations. I've picked up a lot of translations of Dogen, and it's good to sort of, one of them usually helps me get in the door, and then I can sort of mull around. Why did the others choose different words?
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes you can even cause it's, you know, that's what's going on here.
Mm-hmm.
And I have to hear a few more.
Mm-hmm. Language is slippery that way, you know, and each one of us brings our own context of how we study and how we what vocabulary lights us up or shuts us down. Multiple translations are helpful. Thank you. Yes.
Well, there's a lot that's very rich in what you shared, and thank you for your effort to find ways to talk about these things. In particular, I'm just reflecting on something I've been thinking a lot about too, which is how much, like when we're trying to figure out how to practice, we think we're supposed to figure out what this one should do, and there's so much of an emphasis on this one. And, you know, the suggestion to look out and to be in relationship, that's where the guidance comes from. It's not going to come by spending another 5 days inside my little cage trying to think of it and figure it out. I mean, granted, there's some benefit to that for some things, but like with the king and the, you know, the courtiers, I mean, how do you actually sense what it is that's most needed and helpful if you don't have your attention intimately on the what's out here?
Yeah.
And I know with my own friend with Catherine, that was a huge part of what how she worked with me, you know, being so kind of ego-centric. Mm-hmm. It was very much about sound and speed and static, being aware of how much space I took up.
Yeah.
And I just really think that is a profound practice. And I think especially if we're suffering, the place to look for a liberation from suffering is to open to the narrative being.
Yes, thank you. And each one a little different, you know. Okay, if I share something personal in contrast.
Sure.
So she interacted with you about sound and creating static. In contrast with me, my gassho used to be kind of closed in like this. My elbows kind of down by my ribs. She said, "You got to take up more space." And pushed my elbows up. Catherine. And Mel says it this way, you know, if imagine walking along a levee, on one side is a riverbank and on one side is a lake, and Mel is the teacher walking behind. As we know, in the canine world, this is my world, in the canine world, the leader is at the end of the line. Now walking behind and seeing the people in front of him, if someone is going a little bit too far to the left to keep them out of the water, he'll say, "Could you move a little right to stay on the levee?" And if someone is veering a little too far right to fall in the river, he'll say, "Could you move a little bit left?" But basically, even though it sounds like opposite instructions, the instruction is the same. And that is, occupy your Dharma position. Notice what the world is calling you to do. Thank you. So we'll close on that and we'll practice. I vow, with emphasis on the vow. And anybody who would like my coaching at the door, I'll plant myself there, show you my strategy for opening and closing the door pretty quietly. May we all use our companionship with each other as a pathway to beginning to understand the depth of the Dharma that has been passed on to us.
Beings are numberless. I vow to save them. Delusions are inexhaustible. I vow.